This morning, I want to talk about the many paths, the many different paths to truth. As I speak, Swami Kriyananda is in Los Angeles launching his new book, or his new version of the path called The New Path, which is really the story of one man's search for the truth that is referenced in the reading this morning, that jewel that we talk about. And it brings to my mind a story of a time when I took my class. I'm a teacher at Living Wisdom School and the director. But when I was teaching full-time, I used to take the class on these field trips. This one time, we ended up in the gold country near the town of Folsom that Johnny Cash has made so famous. And I have a personal connection with Folsom because my grandfather was a guard at Folsom Prison in the early 1920s. And my grandmother was the postmistress at the prison. And my father grew up in the prison. And there were homes outside the big granite walls that contained the prisoners for the personnel. So often in my childhood, we would go visit my relatives who still lived in Folsom, and many times we went to the prison and looked at it. So I couldn't resist but to share this with the children, and of course, what did they want to do? Well, let's go see the prison. So we did. And we toured it, and they saw the museum, and they examined the cell and the confiscated weapons, and it was very real. And then, of course, there was the ubiquitous gift shop. Who could tell? And we went in there, and they were looking around. Now, behind the counter was a trustee, one of those trusted inmates who had earned the right to be there. And he was curious about these kids midweek. They should have been in school. And so he said to them, do you go to a Christian school? And they looked at him, and I was watching from the corner of the store, and they were confused. And one of the boys said, well, I think we go to a Hindu school. And the other boy said, no, we go to a Buddhist school. And then the third boy said, no, I've got it. We go to a Baptist school. And the inmate just looked at them and he said, I guess you go to a spiritual school. And he got it right. They went to a spiritual school, Living Wisdom School, which is a direct result of Master's mission. Master was given the responsibility of bringing to the West the notion of Sanatan Dharma. That is the universal truth. That is that truth is one and eternal, and that it doesn't matter how you express it as long as you always come back to that deepest part. And so the first thing he did when he got to this country was start a school. Now, it didn't take off that well. And eventually he turned to the monastic mode because, as he said, before I can get the children, I have to get the parents, and the parents weren't ready. So time passed, and Swami took up the torch, and when he founded Ananda, in that community he founded an Ananda school. But the difficulty was that all the kids who went to that school, my own two included, were the children of devotees. So they all were on the same path. And Master's ideal was there should be a school for children from families who are on all different paths. So when ultimately we founded the community here in Palo Alto and we had families who wanted a school like the one at Ananda, we had an opportunity to create, to fulfill part of Master's dream. And so it came into existence as Living Wisdom School, initially Ananda, but then people thought, oh, it must just be for the Ananda children. So we changed the name to Living Wisdom School. And we have children from families who are on every different path you can imagine and on no path, but who come to our school for various reasons. Now, when I told the story of Folsom Prison to our parents at a parent gathering, you should have heard the ripple of laughter that went throughout the room, just like yours. But I knew why they were laughing, Because every time a parent comes and wants to interview me and tour the school, one of the questions inevitably is, well, how do you do it? And behind that question is the idea that, well, maybe they don't do it. Maybe they just say they do it. And those children were a perfect example. The little boy who said, oh, we're a Hindu school, he was Hindu. And the little boy who said, we're a Buddhist school, he was a little boy who, during the time when we put on the Buddha play about the life of Buddha, he was in the second grade, he just became enamored with Buddha. His family was not Buddhist, but he just built all these structures and he put the statues of Buddha all over it. And he would sit there in admiration of his creation. And the little boy who said, oh, I think we're a Baptist school, we had just done the play on Jesus that year. And John the Baptist was an unforgettable character played by Richard Salva. And this little boy had taken that in and he thought, oh, Baptist, I've heard of that. And so, you know, our parents were being reassured that no, we're not sectarian, we're not dogmatic, we're Sanatan Dharma, universal truth. And still, as I explain that to them, they wonder, well, how do they do it? Is it really possible? Because nobody that I know, except my own children and the children who have gone to Living Wisdom schools, have the experience that we give our children. And I'll tell you a little bit. I'll give you a little glimpse of how we do it because it's so instructive in terms of the notion that truth is one and eternal and universal. When we teach the alphabet to children, we don't do it in exactly the same way that they would have it taught in public school. And I found this out by happenstance just last Sunday. I thought, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And one of the ladies at the ice cream social at the community, who doesn't have children who go to our school, but she lives at the community, she kind of crashed the party. I guess the magnetism was too great. And I was talking to her, and I said, well, how do you know about our school? And she says, oh, I know about your school. I know all about your school because I know about Matthew, a little second grader, and when he was learning the alphabet. And I said, really? And she says, yes. She said, do you know that in every other school, when you learn N, it stands for nest. And when you learn J, it stands for Jack in the Box, but not at Living Wisdom. Matthew learned that N stands for nice and J stands for joy. And I said, well, yes. You see, those are two of our school rules. Practice kindness, be nice, and choose happiness, choose joy. And the other day I was standing out in the parking lot talking to one of our Indian parents. He was just so thrilled. He said to me, you know, my children come home. He's new this year. He has three children in our school. He says, my children come home and they're singing these chants. He says, we've been singing bhajans since they were 4 years old. But he said, and these aren't quite the same. She said, but they're so uplifting and the kids are so excited. Isn't it wonderful that they get to go to school and sing uplifting chants? And I said, yes, it really is, isn't it? And I said, that is part of the point of what we do. And he said, they are enjoying themselves so much. And he turned to leave. And as he turned to leave, I heard this voice coming from the flower pantry. And it was Ken, who was arranging the flowers for the altar. And he says, yeah, that's the way to go, Helen. Enjoy yourself. Then they'll behave. And I said, well, Ken, that's another school rule. In fact, that's the first school rule. Enjoy yourself. And he said, that's pretty cool. And the idea is that if we hold up these principles of life, that every person on any path would wish for their children, then we're honoring the spirituality of the child's deepest part. And whatever the other things that go along with it, whether they go to temple or they go to Catholic Church or they bow five times to the east, it doesn't really matter. You know, they're learning to enjoy themselves. They're practicing kindness. They're choosing happiness. They're learning to be a loving friend. These are the school rules. They're learning to use their will to create good energy. Think about that one. They're learning to trust themselves. When they go to high school, they'll have an inner compass that will help them when the peer pressure gets to be bigger and bigger. And they're learning to find the joy within, to find the joy within. So yes, we teach the alphabet a little differently, and we have school rules that are a little bit different. And we have a school play, and where other children are learning their lines for the Wizard of Oz, and there's nothing wrong with the Wizard of Oz, and for Cinderella or Peter Pan or whatever it is, our children are learning the scriptures that go along with the lives of the great one of that year. And so some years they learn the Bhagavad Gita. Other years they learn the New Testament. Sometimes they learn the other kinds of scriptures from all the religions. We've done Jesus and Moses and Buddha and Krishna. I'm looking at Ramurti because he's often the voice of God in our plays. And we've done Kuan Yin from China and Hafiz from Persia and Martin Luther King. And this year we're going to do the Dalai Lama from Tibet. And so as we go along, they bring into their consciousness the idea that God expresses differently and that it's an individual choice how we embrace the notion of the divine in our lives. And they learn a respect. They learn a respect for other people's ways. And Swami says that that is spiritual maturity. That actually is the answer for world peace, don't you think? That if we could all respect others' ways, and the fact that underlying everything is the same desire for God, for the bliss that comes from knowing God, that is Sanatana Dharma. And Swami is down in Los Angeles offering this book, which documents his search for truth as a young man and on into his mature years, founding Ananda and so forth, doing all those things that makes it possible for us to be here today. And as I look out at you, I can think to myself, gee, just on Friday morning, we had the whole school here. And all the children were sitting right here in front of me. And they were doing the superconscious living exercises. And I know they do them when they go home because their parents tell me, I am awake and ready. Wouldn't you want your child, Buddhist, Hindu, Muslim, Christian, to be awake and ready? And I am positive, energetic, enthusiastic. And awake my body cells. Be glad my brain. Be wise and strong. And awake my sleeping saint. All those exercises which they do with those bodily movements, taking them inside, are preparing them for their own search for truth, for their own unique destiny. We have to make the distinction between the universality of truth and the individuality of dharma. Another's dharma is his dharma. Our dharma is our dharma. And yet, it all comes out in the end pretty much the same if we persevere, if we hold true. I was walking with my brother, who is a Catholic worker, one day. And a Catholic worker, if you don't know, leads a life modeled on the life of St. Francis. They actually lead lives of poverty. And his whole orientation is to help the poor, mostly. But he also helps me, who I'm not so poor. But, you know, I can turn around and say, Larry, could you possibly get the middle school a couch? And he'll do it. And we have a beautiful couch this year. So I was walking with him and I said, Larry, does it bother you or how do you feel when I'm talking and I might reference reincarnation or karma or the astral world? And he never broke a stride and he just said, well, he said, you know, when you get into the realm of the saints, the language doesn't make any difference at all. And I thought, yes. We were all brought up, I was brought up Catholic. Devout Catholic family, and I remember when I first started giving sermons, sometimes people would say, you're so Catholic. And it was true. I apologize. But the part of Catholic that I was not the part that was dogmatic. I'll tell you another little story. I was at a dinner party, oh, a couple of years ago, and one of the guests somehow got off on a rant about Catholics. And she was basically saying, how could any thinking person be a Catholic? And she said, look at it. Papal infallibility, the Crusades, the Inquisition, and she went on and on and on. And I looked at her and I said, well, I said, you know, that's really not what it means to be Catholic. And she said, no, she said, those Catholics, they go around, they persecute everybody. And I said, well, do you speak from personal experience? And she did. She said, I grew up in a little town in eastern United States. I forget the name of it. But she said, the Catholics persecuted the Presbyterians. And I said, you're a Presbyterian, aren't you? And she said, yes, she was a Presbyterian. And then I said to her, well, wouldn't it be more helpful, because she wouldn't let it go and she was getting so excited. I said, wouldn't it be more helpful if we concentrated on the commonalities? We all believe in love. We all believe in God. And we believe in being kind to our neighbors. And she just literally stopped in her tracks. And she said, well, that's rather interesting way to approach it. She wasn't used to thinking outside of the sectarian box. And what I was saying to her was simply a colloquial version of Sanatana Dharma. She's never heard the term. I'll never use the term with her because she wouldn't appreciate it. She doesn't even have an inkling that there's a whole Eastern tradition that has a richness and a value that segues right into the Western tradition. And if you read Swami's The Promise of Immortality, that's what he's doing in there. He's showing how those traditions come together. The great avatars, Krishna on the one hand, Jesus on the other hand, were ultimately saying the same old thing. And the people who really understand that are the saints. The saints. Because why? Because they've gone inside to that inner self, and they have communed with the divine. And in that ultimate receptivity, they have brought in the vast stores of truth and knowledge. Now, this is something I grew up with. I loved the saints. I read all about them all the time. I exhausted every library within an area of a mile in my neighborhood, trying to find more and more books on saints. And I especially loved the ones that featured little children, the story of Saint Bernadette, the story of the children of Fatima, and then much later the story of the children of Medjugorje. But Saint Rose of Lima as a child, all these different saints who were models for me. So I never really got too into the dogmatic part of the Catholic Church, just the devotional part. And that's what is offered to us on the path of self-realization. Now, Yogananda said that self-realization will eventually become the religion of the world. Why? Because anybody can practice it. A Catholic can practice it. A Hindu can practice it, a Muslim, a Buddhist, it doesn't matter. Because what is it? It's going inside and discovering the inner self, the true nature of our inner self, which is divine. And how do we do it? Through Kriya Yoga, through meditation, through inner communion with the Lord. Now, in our tradition, there is the story of Jesus coming to Babaji and saying to Babaji, the lights on the high altar of my church have been growing dim and are ill attended. He said, lower altars of good works are still alight, but the noble taper of inner communion burns low. He said, let us together, in Christ's love, Christ consciousness, bring those lights ablaze once again. And that's why we're here. That's why anybody is on any path, whether they know it or not, is to bring to a brighter light that noble taper of inner communion using whatever techniques at hand they have. What a treasure. Let us not waste a moment, but go within and celebrate the divine in our own lives.